And now, you're tuned into Tampa Bay's RBLR Sports.
Hi, hello, how are ya? This is RBLR Sun FC. My name is Liz. The one on the end is Tom. And we have John Morrissey in the house tonight. Woo! I don't know if I'm actually close enough to the mic. Woo! I just realized I was far away. Hi! All right, Tom, how are you today?
Liz, I'm doing great. I feel barely any pain from the soccer game I was in last night, which is a major improvement. But it also may have something to do with the Long Island iced tea I just had. So we'll see. John, how are you doing tonight?
Doing well. I always forget you guys have a banger of an intro song, so putting me in a good mood from right off the bat.
Yeah, and then I always come in screaming because I like to make sure the audience is awake.
Yeah. Our energy is way different than most podcasts you will find as far as soccer is concerned in America. We bring something a little bit different. That's the idea, at least.
To hot takes and vibes.
Mostly vibes.
Yeah. All right. So we had a decent amount of things happen in the last week, honestly. We had some comings. We had a goings. We had a hint. Oh, actually, we have two comings, possibly.
One is hinted.
We don't know yet. Very exciting. But actually, I should do this before I just go off into everything. John, why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourself and the podcast that you have?
Yeah, so you probably know me from the internet as at USL Tactics. I mean, the name kind of explains my whole shtick. I talk about the championship, League One, and now the Super League from the kind of tactics-based perspective. I try to break down the game in a way that kind of makes people understand what's going on strategically. You can catch me on Substack writing about all that sort of stuff, especially with the Super League. And then I'm a co-host of the USL show.
Yes, I am continually amazed by how much stuff is just crammed in his brain. He just rattles off like in a comment on Blue Sky. It's kind of wild. It's just like, I'm just going to pull this really niche thing out of my head and just, you know, here we go.
Yeah, this is a coup right here. This is this is our RBLR Sun podcast turning over a new leaf and really joining the fray. I feel like we've done something here tonight before John has said more than a paragraph. The super knowledgeable guy. As much as Liz is passionate about soccer in Tampa Bay, as much as I know about soccer in Tampa Bay, John knows everything there is to know about the USL, essentially. So we're joined by somebody who really knows what they're talking about and will help us drill in sort of on the outsider perspective of what the Super League is doing, what the Tampa Bay Sun have been up to, and why we are, and I will quote, why the Tampa Bay Sun are arguably the most sophisticated possession team in the USL Super League. We'll get into that.
So then, first piece of news, we had a new signing. Welcome, Parker Goins?
Goins.
Goins. Okay, I was like, wait a minute. I actually just realized I've never heard her name yet. So I was like, oh, that's not good. From Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. also from Racing Louisville. So that's pretty cool.
Yep.
Yeah. Tom, what do you know about her?
Well, Liz, you did a little pun there in the beginning, and I don't think you even realized. You said we had a couple comings and we had a couple goings.
Oh, no, I didn't even. I mean, yes, it was entirely planned.
Yeah, we had one really huge Goins. We had a Parker Goins. She's one of those players who succeeds wherever she goes. I'm a big proponent of you got to know how to win before you can win. It's tough. But if you have momentum as a team or as a player, it's easy to keep it going. Parker has that momentum. She's a two-time state champion at Union High School in Tulsa, Oklahoma, as a high schooler. She played all 4 years as a starter, a little bit of injury bump her sophomore year in Arkansas for the Razorbacks. Got signed to Racing Louisville, even though she didn't even put her name up into the draft. They wanted her anyway, and that should tell you the type of player she is. She fits into, and I said it last week with Jordan Zaid, Zaid really fits into the mold of the kind of player we want. She's somebody strong on the right wing, does the right stuff, takes players on, serves the ball in. Parker Goins is that finisher. She ended her career collegiately with Arkansas as their all-time leading assist maker, third all-time for goals. She's a real poacher when it comes to the ball. She's somebody who wants to latch onto the end, which is something I think fits into what we're doing as the second quarter, third quarter, second half Sun team that we're becoming. I think people, we have to get rid of the notion that the Sun are who we were in August. We're not. We're a new team. I'd say more so than any other Super League team. And so I think it's important to see that we're improving constantly. And I think Parker Goins is going to be a big piece of that going forward. We're getting a good player right now.
Yeah, and if you kind of look at the numbers of, albeit in limited time, what Parker Goins did with Louisville in the NWSL, mostly playing on the wing, a bit of the right, a bit of the left, putting up about 0.3 combined XG and XA per 90 minutes. That's a solid contribution for a player who's kind of coming in as a role player, right? Like, you're not establishing that chemistry. You're expected to generate a lot of offense on your own immediately. And I think it is the flexibility of, she's good on the wing. She played striker in college a little bit. Adding that into the mix, especially with the exit of Riley Parker, makes a lot of sense for the construction of this team. And she feels like someone with enough of an NWSL resume that she's more than up to the level. And signing her on a permanent deal as well, in comparison to some of the other clubs that have relied on NWSL loanees, I think it's a solid move from no matter how you slice it, frankly.
Yeah, I think that speaks to the professionalism of the team that we've got here. There's a lot of fun things that Denise Schulte Brown does going forward, as far as moving, you know, Sydney Nocella, one of the league's best dribblers, from the right to the left every game it happens. She tests one side, moves her if it has to happen. And I think the fact that she likes these sort of strong but versatile attacking players just shows that Parker Goins really fits into that pretty well, I think. Liz, you got any thoughts about Goins early on?
Actually, not specifically about Goins. I just had a thought, though. I'm wondering if Denise is sticking to signing players on like actual contracts as opposed to loans, just so she doesn't have to worry about another like rug getting pulled. Like, I feel like we kind of had at the beginning where we were waiting for players to trickle in. She's like, no, we're not doing that. We're just get my contract. It's fine. Which, yeah. I very much appreciate, because I would hate to be in Dallas's shoes right now.
And that's something I'd love to hear from an outsider, from John. I'm heavily focused on the Sun, obviously. It's my local team. It's my favorite team. And I feel like we've been building an identity based around us, around the philosophy of Denise Schulte Brown, who's been the USF coach for a long time, knows what she wants to do with the team. I feel like we make moves. I feel like we do things in a way that other league or other teams, I should say, don't necessarily. You know, Dallas had a lot of the loanees involved. Spokane had some good loan players out there. But I feel like we're, and I'm definitely biased. I watch way more Sun soccer than anything else. But I feel like we're trying to create a brand, an identity of soccer in a way that we want players that fit that, as opposed to other teams just sort of getting good players sometimes.
Yeah, and not to criticize the roster construction of other teams, certainly, but I think Tampa Bay zagged in a way where you saw a number of veteran players with kind of longer track records and that history of leadership come in a quantity that no one else replicated. And part of that is just, you know, that they're going to be good. They're a known quantity. But they also bring that leadership. They bring that sense of, okay, we can set a style, have that influence in the changing room. And so then when you bring in someone like a Parker Goins, who's still somewhat young, but she's not had a ton of professional experience, she has that mentorship around her to come and run the system. And I think as well, when you think about the permanent transfer aspect of it, it was a tough situation for a lot of clubs across the league because you don't know what to expect in year one. If you can get a player who you know is going to be quality, but they're only going to be there for 13 games, you take that. And I think Tampa Bay they have a nice balance. Well, where certainly you're losing someone like Asade, but at the same time, you've got the depth that goes beyond almost every other team in the league, and continuing to add on to that with Goins and Zaid and everything else, I think you're right to identify that there is a little bit of a distinction in the way this team is put together.
I'd like to hear that. Do you have any thoughts? Like last week, I really hammered home how I like not only the signing of Zaid, but the way I think she fits the mold, the identity of the team that we kind of want, kind of driving forward on the right hand side, alleviating some of the pressure because we'd like to sort of build a slow attack on the left hand side. I know it's something you kind of talked about. If nobody listening looked at the style guide that USL Tactics put out, they nailed it. John, you nailed it. If anybody helped you with it, they nailed it. But I've been watching every Tampa Bay Sun soccer game, trying to figure out exactly how this team plays from day one, because it's easier to figure out from day one than it is from day 365, yeah. 100, whatever. You know, you figure out a team's identity from, that's part of the joy of a new league. And so that's what we did. And I feel like what we're doing is we're building up slowly on the left-hand side, working that sort of triangle, pressing up, flipping the field, bringing the right back and the right midfielder inside and forcing the ball where we want it as opposed to where the defense may want it. And I feel like Zaid really fits that mold as a player who will press hard and serve a good ball in. What are your general thoughts on Jordan Zaid? Because I could not be higher on her as a signer.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And filling a need at that right back spot as well, given the way that things have changed over the course of the winter and the MLS loan or MLS NWSL loan ending. Yeah, but you hit the nail on the head stylistically as well, of given how there's almost a designed imbalance to this team where you're really wanting that right back to push forward, kind of complement the flow you get from Giamona and Nicello on that side and kind of within that number 10 right winger corridor. Admittedly, I've not seen a ton of her tape, but from everything you read about her, from the profile you get statistically, seems like a great addition that, again, like you said, fits the identity that Tampa Bay is trying to build. That's what's been impressive from day one, is this team had a sense of style. It didn't really work in the early weeks, but that's the natural growing pain that you get, right? Like, yeah. You knew it was going to be tough, especially when you want to have what I wrote in the piece, like a sophisticated style of offensive soccer. You're trying to build in these different reads. You're trying to develop patterns in a way that maybe in week two isn't going to click, but by the time you're rounding into form for the February return, really is going to pay off, and Zaid can fill a role within that system.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I feel like it's something that I, as a Florida Tropics Arena Soccer League fan, I'm super familiar with, where a lot of our team was built around this Brazilian core that all of a sudden was locked out of the league because their work visas weren't allowed anymore. And it's the same stuff that I dealt with back then in Lakeland in the arena, as I'm seeing right now at a Big Gym Stadium, where we were one team in the beginning of the season with you know, kind of making it work. And you could see it happen over the first 4 or 5 weeks, 6 weeks of the season, and then eventually we started getting these players in, the Jade Moores, the Tasha Flints, and actually becoming what Denise wanted the team to be, where it kind of looked like we were treading water for a while before actually fulfilling these big needs, these big expectations. We all thought we were the big team to, you know, make the playoffs, the first to release the logo, first to sign a player, first to name a coach. We were really pioneers of the league, and it placed a lot of expectations on the coaching, on the players, on the fans, honestly. We're here, and we know there's some pressure on the supporters group to be a big supporters group in this league, and we're feeling it. But all of that comes down to making it seem like the Tampa Bay Sun had to be a big team in the Super League, and it just took a long time to get there, and I want us to get there for the next 6 months, and that's what's really important.
Yeah, I mean Tom pretty much said it. I think this is a good get honestly. And then also we have the added bonus of she has an adorable corgi named Ronnie. And I'm a sucker for a corgi. So, and I have already let her know that we love Ronnie. So hopefully we'll see lots of Ronnie.
Yeah. That's the big thing to me is we're going to get to see a tiny adorable corgi on a water taxi across the Hillsborough River. And that's massive. That's something no other team in the league can say.
She's already taken, I sound like a creeper, but she's already taken into like the what's the park that's right by James B. something or other? I can't think of it all of a sudden. The park that we went to the first game. They have a little dog park there. She's already taken him there and she's like, he's already socializing. I'm a proud mom.
I don't know if you saw that. I'm a fan. The league did a feature on Mackenzie George from Brooklyn. She's got a border collie named Rocky.
Yeah,
that's the front page of the league site right now. So yes, we're praying for Ronnie to get that attention. Yeah.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
I hate how great Brooklyn is doing. You know, we mention it probably once a show. Oh, good for Brooklyn. Great for them. You know, we're not a super
league last
show.
Week they're like, oh, we're going to play some Italian teams because we're so cool.
Really good, guys.
Okay. Awesome. I don't really know how we won up that.
Yeah, we're the I feel like on one hand, I don't want to pat ourselves in the back too hard, but we're the big Super League like show that's focused on one team. I know Spokane Soccer Show does good stuff up there in Washington, but I mean, there's nobody really doing stuff for Brooklyn, even though they're far and away the best Super League team right now. And I'd say that
there's no one attending Brooklyn.
I mean, I live up in New York. I went to the home opener, and
I apologize. There's one attending.
Fun atmosphere, but I mean, it was really tough with the field wasn't going to be playable at Coney Island, so they're moving up to the northernmost tip of Manhattan. Like it's 2 minutes away from like you're looking into other boroughs. I think the marketing lift was a struggle given that, but the test really begins when we get back to play and they're at Coney Island starting. And I think they don't have a home game until March, but that's going to be the thing for Brooklyn.
Yeah. They're really pushing that on socials lately. They're like 61 days away from their debut at Coney Island. And it's,
you know what? We were behind, but we're not that behind.
Yeah.
We had our stadium.
We
didn't have a coach for the first two or three games. She couldn't be over for a bit. Yeah.
Which is,
and then they end up changing their coach entirely.
Yeah. It makes everything Brooklyn has done all the much more like incredible. I mean, I knew they were going to be good when they took Sydney Martinez because she was the one player I really wanted down here in Tampa. She's a USF grad. She's, you know, she went insane in the Gold Cup with Puerto Rico national team. I wanted her so bad. I'm a goalie myself, so I desperately needed something to latch onto and call my own. And I thought it was going to be Sydney. It turns out it's Ashley Workus, and that's okay as well. John, do you want to do a little fan service right now? Give us your thoughts on Ashley Workus.
I mean, she's been tremendous. Like, I'm preaching to the choir on this one, especially with those first couple of games, right? Like, setting the tone immediately is one of, if not the top goalkeeper in the league. I think the thing for me is the service she provides with the ball at her feet. It's very much functional rather than, like, the prettiest passing you'll ever see, but really wise and accurate in how she advances the ball downfield. And I think you've seen that connection develop, especially with Tosh Flynn getting into the squad a lot more, who brings that hold-up sensibility to the striker spot. And if you can get Orcus to Flint, have the wingers running in behind, then really effective for Tampa Bay. So Orcus really, like, I think it's obvious to say very good shot stopper, but the complete game and the way that fits into the Suns' broader tactical identity has been awesome to see.
I think we're one of the teams that runs kind of a more of a short buildup off the goal kicks than a lot of the other teams in the league. Is that right?
Short initially. And it's almost in the way of like goading the opponent up. There's actually been pretty much little variation across the league in terms of everyone wants to play out short initially. Tampa Bay is good about that kind of bait and switch, be patient until you find that opportunity. And that's when Orcas is very good about finding, okay, we've got the moment now to move forward, hit Flint upfield and really break through. Where somebody like, say, Spokane has struggled with that decision-making where they feel like they're passing for the sake of passing at certain moments. And I think that differentiates why they're a team that's scored, I think, the second least goals in the league right now.
And I think that's interesting because a lot of the criticism of Orcas when she was trying to break in the MSL was her passing, her footwork with the ball, the decision-making at her feet. And it's something I kind of saw early on at the season where she was kind of the consummate shot stopper and anything else was sort of incidental. But she has grown, I think, in the few short weeks that she's been a pro goalie into something more than she was before. And I think that's something to say for the caliber of the league. It's something to be said for the coaching that we have here in Tampa, but also obviously for the player that Ashley Orcas is to be able to absorb that kind of thing and become a better player, despite what, you know, I can't remember who it was that did draft her and then shunted her off real quick, unceremoniously style. But I think she's a better player than a lot of scouts around the country have given her credit for. And it's something that we've seen here. And that speaks more to the, it's a big thing we talk about a lot here. It speaks to the place of the Super League in the general ecosystem of American women's soccer, where it's another league that people can go pro in. You know, with Title IX, there's more women's soccer players than there are men's. Colleges have to have women's soccer teams to make things make sense for their numbers when it comes to athletic scholarships. And so to finally have a couple more, just eight, but a couple more professional teams is really helping the growth of the sport, is really helping the dreams of kids. You know what I mean? I don't want to like get too woo-woo about it, but that's
no, really, I mean, like, yeah, was Ashley or I mean, I know we're obsessed with her. It's just, I'm so sorry. If you're listening out, we're just obsessed with you. We love you so much. I'm sorry. Like on her TikTok,
the things we say off the show,
from a year ago, it was just like, her goals were like, don't get cut. And like, that's heartbreaking. She's so good.
Yeah.
Like that's mind boggling a year ago.
Well, and what's awesome with the fit in Tampa Bay, especially is like she, and you rightly point out, like she's not Manuel Neuer with the ball at her feet. But she's found a system in Tampa Bay that understands what she's good at, and she's able to do that for them. And you mentioned like the expanding opportunity. She's a player that will, there are what, 160 professional spots across this league. She's somebody who wouldn't have a chance to play in the United States and get paid to do it otherwise. Yeah. And she is one of, again, 160 people that gets that opportunity now. That's why this is such an important project.
And the spots to do that as a goalie are so much less than as a field player. I mean, that's just me being sympathetic as, you know, as a goalie, as a guy sitting here saying, oh, I blew up my shoulder making a save yesterday. No big deal. Don't worry. I let in six goals. So it's not like I'm that good. Two of them were penalty kicks. Liz was there.
And one of those was definitely some BS.
Yeah, my defense.
I was there, freezing my butt off. That's how much I love my co-host.
Yeah, we're that's how big we are on goalies. And it's not just about supporting; it's about being critical. But Kozol was great. It makes sense why Kozol came into the fold at that sort of halfway mark in the fall season, where Ashley wasn't doing everything exactly right all the time. But we had this player on loan from Thorns. Why not use her? We got to use her. She looks great. Now she's away. And Orcas is slotting back right in. And I think we're going to be okay. I'm not worried about the situation there. I'm really, frankly, not too worried about our situation anywhere, which is almost worrying in its own way. I don't want to feel discomfortable with my soccer team. I say that as a Rowdies fan, where I'm pretty uncomfortable all the time. You know, it's high expectations.
It's a different kind of comfortable, though, because this is the kind of comfortable where we're like, oh, well, we were really bad before, but now I've seen progress. It's not like where we were at the beginning of the season before we played a game. Like, no, we're going to be the best.
Yeah. You can almost split it into like 3-4 distinct sections where it was like the preseason, where the Tampa Bay Sun won the USL Super League preseason. We are the champions. If there was a trophy for it, we are the champions of preseason. And then it started and things didn't go quite so good. We drew Dallas in the first ever game. Things were kind of interesting. We were playing Sienna Bryan and all these other – Sienna Bryan is my academy standout, going to Georgetown, big fan of her. But a lot of other academy players coming in and then, you know, kind of trying to make it work. And then the more and more the season went on, we got the players we wanted, the Jaden Moores, the Tasha Flint, et cetera, et cetera. And now we finally look like what we want to do. And it's just a matter of connecting the dots for the next 6 months. And we're in a unique spot, especially, I think, because we had the Hurricane game against Fort Lauderdale, where we do have an extra game in hand versus everybody else, where I think if that first game results in 3 points on February 8th, I think everything
is over. It's over for the league. It's over.
Yeah, it's because on one hand, it sucks to lose that home game. It sucks to lose that fall season game. But on the other hand, you almost wanted, if you're a Tampa Bay Sun fan in hindsight, you almost want to defer those one game, two games, three games later until you get all your pieces, you know? It's like playing a card game and wanting to have a good hand. And we didn't quite have the hand we wanted for a long time. And now we're there. And Tyrone Mears, you better be looking out, man, because we're not the same Tampa Bay Sun you played earlier in the year down there in Fort Lauderdale. So I like that. I think there's something we can do going forward. That we're making a lot of moves. We were talking about this earlier, right before the recording started, where we've made a lot of moves, whereas – I mean, who else has done anything, you know? Who else has done anything?
Yeah, Carolina trading with you. Yeah.
Just exactly. Carolina taking my favorite player.
Yeah. And that segues us into the other big news. We have lost players before. Tampa Bay Sun, we do things. That's part of the thing of being a Tampa Bay Sun fan. We're going to do things. I'm sorry. But we did something a lot of people, not just Liz, a lot of people are real big unhappy about. We got rid of Riley Mattingly Parker. Yeah, we did. Oh, Eureka's back in, just in time to second to the sad part of the show. Riley Mattingly Parker, she's super cool, super sweet, super energetic. One of those good locker room players, but you saw it. Look, I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be that guy. But look, we're 30 minutes into it. So if you're listening, you're listening because you love the team, and you're not going to end up hating him because I'm saying something mean. She wasn't going to be that player going forward. She was there. She was super there in the early part of the season when we were playing the Academy girls, when we were trying to make right what wasn't right. And then she started coming onto the field late in the game, late in the season, to kind of, and it speaks to her character. When she got on the field late in the game, 88th minute, 85th minute, 90 plus, she took the ball and she didn't try to do anything crazy. She drove to the corner flag. I've never seen a player who liked going to the corner flag more than Riley Parker, because it meant her team would win if she did that. And it speaks to her character. It speaks to her style of play. It speaks to who she is as a human being. So it sucks to lose her. But she doesn't fit into the plans the same way that Parker Goins does, I think.
Yeah. Makes sense?
Yeah, and I think
she hasn't gotten minutes in a while, and it's unfortunate, and it's a crime for a player as good as she is. It really is. Yes. Because I was going back, I was going to make like an end of the year post, and then I never end up doing it. But I went back and I was trying to clip from the first game, and I just stopped for a minute, and I was watching Riley, and she makes like this great shot, and I'm like, oh, I miss her. I miss when she played.
Yeah.
No, I think the upside for her is that she's going to get real minutes in Carolina. Like, this is a team that needs a striker badly. They've got Mia Corbin. Corbin has been awesome. Corbin's better when she can drop low, kind of do number 10 things and let somebody else like be the number nine and make lots of runs and be that player. Talk about a fit for that role. Like Riley Parker is going to kill it in Carolina. So on one hand, if you're a Sun fan, you kind of feel bad because you're making one of your competitors ahead of you in the table a stronger team. But letting Riley get the minutes, I think, is the bigger deal overall.
Yeah, it's good for her, and it reunites her with an Alabama teammate, Ashlyn Serebka. And I think there's definitely something to be said for chemistry at this level, where if you got two players who know each other, it's gonna work out a lot better than players who are just coming in first year of the league. So I think that could help. Is there anything specifically? I know you know the whole league, John, better than like either us do or Big Sun guys. But how does Serebka fit into what Carolina likes to do, and how might that affect what Riley wants to do up there?
Yeah, Serebka's kind of been the jack of all trades for that team. Played right back initially early on in the season. They kind of identified that she'd be better used moving upfield a little bit. So she's played on the right wing quite often, especially down the stretch. Good about cutting inside, feeding other teammates with her passing. I think the chemistry, if she continues to be used as an attacking player, is going to pay off immediately next to Parker. And that's probably a big reason why they went out and got who they did to fill that role. Like when you can rely on the fact that, okay, we've got two players who instantly have that connection from the jump. That means a lot, especially for a Carolina team that kind of ended the fall season a bit poorly and is looking to, yeah, exactly, find that momentum again.
Yeah. Liz nailed it with the and I hope you did see it, because it took some effort. I was there for the whole hour and a half that she was doing it on her laptop. The Carolina Decent logo. It was a team that, I think it speaks to the type of coach that Philip Poole is up there in Charlotte, where he coached with the youth national teams for a long time, where he knows how to get a team of players together and make them work, but not necessarily how to make them work in the long term. And that's not nothing. I coach high school lacrosse, with young girls too. It's not me saying I'm smarter or better than Philip Poole, because I'm not. But I'm just saying it's a different talent thing that you're working with. It's a different expectations when you have a youth national team, when you have a youth club team, versus when you have a professional team. And so he did something really good that you would expect a youth national team coach to be able to do, and bring a lot of good players in and make them work well together. And then it sort of started falling apart the more professional coaches like Denise saw the tactics and what Carolina wanted to do. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Carolina has good players and good tactics, but I don't think it's that advanced. Am I wrong there? I don't think they're doing too much special.
They're never a team where I'm watching them and thinking, oh, that's interesting. Like it's very much a kind of boilerplate 4-4-2. And I really don't mean that as like anything.
No, you're right. I know. You could say the same of Spokane, honestly.
Sure. Like there are a number of teams that are just succeeding by doing something simple. But I think Carolina is a little bit hesitant to change when it's clear that they've needed to change for a couple weeks at this point. So, and then again, like nothing against Philip Poole, like you're right to point out, moving from developmental role into more of a chess match kind of job, that can be difficult. And I think he started the season with great concepts, but needs to evolve a little bit. So yeah, 100%.
Yeah. And I think it's something you can see with like a Michael Dickey in Lexington, where I think he's a coach that he's also a coach of the U.S. national team youth levels, even younger than Philip Poole did. I think Dickey was a U-17s guy. You have to be a little bit more creative when you play with those U-17s, because there's not a big talent gulf when it gets to the international game in the U-17. And so he had to come up with some fun stuff. And you said it in your stylistic analysis of Lexington SC is – I'm paraphrasing as a Sun fan, but they're not good, but they're not boring either.
Yeah. The games they've been in have involved 50 goals and no one else has exceeded like the low 30s. Like Lexington, a lot is going to happen.
So wild.
It's probably
I didn't
not great.
That much of a difference.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. The defense is a struggle there.
Yeah, and I don't know what the club as a whole in Lexington is a massive mystery to me. I don't know what their end goals are there. Moving the men's side up to the championship from League One is severely interesting, especially with Louisville right there. I don't know who exactly the owners are in Lexington, but building that stadium and having the and I've done it before on this show where I've been like, Lexington has bad attendance. So I don't want to be like that guy because I don't feel like attendance matters that hugely in the grand scheme of things, to be honest. It's more about the behind the scenes, the pockets, and then the on-field. What happens in the terraces isn't necessarily that important. It just feels important because that's where we are. But things feel very strange in Lexington. I've been following domestic soccer for, you know, about a decade, and I've never seen anybody quite do it like Lexington has. And I don't know if I'm saying that complimentarily, but it's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, the owners, I think their money is from insurance. So like, they've got deepish pockets, clearly. They've certainly been willing to invest on the men's side. Like, that team in League One was spending money at about the level of an average or even above average championship team, even last year when they finished almost last place.
Very cool.
The thing, at least heading into their championship season, they brought in some really strong members of the front office and scouting staff. I love their coaching hire. And I think we're going to probably see a similar process on the women's side where maybe they didn't get it right from year one, but they're willing to spend, they're willing to eventually make the change that's needed. So yeah, like the attendance, maybe it is worrying, but they just opened that new venue right in time for some pretty nasty winter weather. Like, I think it's kind of wait and see with Lexington.
And that was what I heard out of a lot of Lexington fans, is it's been cold as hell. And I get it. So it is, it's something to keep an eye on, but it's not something I'm worried about. I don't think Lexington's going to drop out by any means. I don't think we have to worry about them leaving the Super League. But again, you know, they got good coaches on the championship side, good coaches on the Super League side. It's just a matter of kind of making it coalesce, and I haven't seen it. But, man, they are playing fun soccer. I don't care if they're a bad team, if they're losing. If I was up there in Central Kentucky, I'd be showing out for that team, because that is, at the very least, something very interesting besides the horse races that are going on up there. So, cool.
Did you want to briefly talk about the players Dallas lost? Because we already kind of went over Carolina was the only other team really to sign people besides us.
Yeah, that's kind of where we're at in this part of the and I'm glad personally on a personal level where I took about 2 weeks off the podcast to go enjoy Christmas in New Mexico with my mother, where I didn't have to talk about when nothing was happening, not just with the club, but with the league as a whole. And now things are happening with the Sun and nothing is happening with the league. Dallas let Winnia Hudson go back to where is she from? I wrote it down.
Washington, right?
Washington.
Right? Yeah. Okay.
And Sam Meza back to Seattle Reign.
Seattle needs Sam Meza, so I assume they probably want her.
She'll probably be playing, yeah, real quick.
Yeah.
But that was the thing, especially we had that big watch party down here in St. Pete where we got a decent amount of people to watch the Sun versus Trinity game. And it just, man, it was a buster, man. It was not fun. And I don't know what to think of John. This is where I would really like you. Like, what's Dallas's deal? Are they good?
I really thought Dallas was good, and I think that Dallas without Sam Meza is not good. Like, that's the crux of the issue right now. She was so definitional to basically everything they did, not only like with the ball at her feet as a very progressive passer, as an unbelievably great dribbler, I'm like the best in the league for my taste. Without that presence in the midfield, somebody who's almost press-proof, I don't quite know how this team clicks. And credit to Pauline McDonald, because she made some changes tactically early in the season to kind of get them up to second place.
Yeah.
It's going to be a tall task to repeat the trick without Meza.
Yeah. And I know, Liz, you were, when I told you Meza was gone from Dallas, you about like, you pulled like balloons out of your pockets and stuff.
Yeah. I was like, oh, I was like, hell yeah. Now I want to play Dallas again.
Yeah, because they were a dangerous team going forward. I feel like they with Chioma Bagagu and Amber Brooks,
I want revenge from our home opener. I want revenge.
Yeah, as far as and this will be a fun thing for you, John, is that when it comes to rivalries in the Super League, I feel like there's a couple. I don't know actually, but there's the obvious Tampa Bay Fort Lauderdale one, just based off of history. But more than that, Liz, back me up here. I think our rivals are Dallas. I want to beat them more than I want to beat Fort Lauderdale. Because that was our first game.
Ooh, I don't know. I really want to beat Fort Lauderdale. Ooh. Ooh, you're underestimating how petty I am.
Mm. That was a draw. It was our first game. They hurt Carly Jamona. Which
they did hurt our Carly.
I feel like them hurting Amber. Let's not say they. Let's lay some blame.
Specifically, Amber Brooks is our rival, and we have to take her down.
Yes, Amber Brooks hurt Carly Jamona. It wasn't on purpose. She didn't mean to do it. It wasn't.
Yeah.
Amber Brooks took out a knife and stabbed Carly in the face.
Yes, right on the field.
Yes, it was sick. I don't know how the ref didn't see. But the fact of the matter is, I feel like leading up into that first game of the season, first game of ever, we had these big expectations on us, and then all of a sudden we came out and we drew against Dallas, and it was heartbreaking. It was disappointing, and so I think going into that game, not only losing Carly Jamona in that first game derailed that first game, I feel like not having her involved all 90 in that first game kind of derailed what we wanted to do for the rest of the next couple games. Where we didn't have our game plan there because we didn't execute our game plan from the first 90. And so that messed us up going forward. And so to me, to be able to play Dallas that second time out there in the Cotton Bowl, especially because, you know, emotionally speaking, we had that big watch party and we drew. And that hurt. That sucked. I was mad. Whenever I play Dallas, I'm way more into it. And part of that is we've only played Fort Lauderdale the one time. And it was kind of a bullshit hurricane. Like, it wasn't a hurricane, but it was rainy. And I'm mad they scored in, like, what, the 85th minute or whatever on us?
Yeah, it was, like, the last 10 minutes.
Yeah. But those two teams, I think the Tampa Bay Sun-Dallas thing and the Tampa Bay Sun-Fort Lauderdale thing are, like, setting a league needs rivalries, you know?
To start. Oh, yeah.
And I think we're bringing that more than anything. I want to bring the hate when I bring a podcast, because I want it. If you're out there, that's why I talk shit to Spokane too, because I know they have a podcast. So like, but
Tom brings the hate, I bring the petty, and we make a beautiful team.
Yeah, we're real horrible to a lot of people, but we do love dogs. But that's the thing I care deeply about what Dallas does. Yes, I do hold us as a, I hold them as a standard as to what we want to do. So they lost all these academy players, a couple going back to high school, two of them, Jordan Hardiman, Camden Fuller going to Virginia, Olivia Belcher going to Alabama, which, as we know, is a good program. So they're losing them. They're losing their two, Meza, huge. Winnia Hudson, big. And I think there's going to be some cracks in that armor, because they did really kind of, and John, back me up here, they built the Dallas Trinity team around have a kind of a Texan identity, right?
No, for sure. Like playing at the Cotton Bowl, which is such a historically important place there, and kind of have that like gritty, no holds barred sort of style, that really was the identity. And how are they going to reforge that heading into the second half now becomes a major question.
Yeah, I absolutely think so. And it's something I want to see going forward. It's something I want to beat them almost as much as I want to beat Fort Lauderdale. but come on,
you want to cream Fort Lauderdale every single time.
I want Fort Lauderdale to lose 10-0 in every game they play. Okay, that's not a friendly rivalry thing where like, oh, I want to measure the Sun against the Trinity because I think we're both good programs with good mindsets and goals as far as the second women's professional soccer league is concerned. I think Dallas is a good market. I think it's surprising that FC Dallas hasn't capitalized on that, despite having a very strong academy, despite having an FC Dallas women's semi-pro team for a number of years. So it's very surprising there hasn't been that strong DFW semi-pro or professional women's team there. And that's where I'm at with Dallas. With Fort Lauderdale, I hope they lose to us 10-0. I hope they lose to Lexington 8-0. I hope they lose 4-0 to Brooklyn. I want Tyrone Mears to slip on a banana peel and throw his parfait up and it falls on his face and now he's got yogurt in his mustache. That's where I want Fort Lauderdale to be. It's different. They're both rivalries. But hey.
Evocative imagery right there with the parfait.
He seems like a parfait guy, okay? I am too. It's not a knock, but I want unfortunate things to happen to Tyrone Mears' parfaits. Make that the title of the episode. So real quick, I know, Liz, you mentioned it earlier. What's wrong? You all right? You good?
Let's not put not nice things as the episode titles. The audience has to come for that.
You were just saying there are rivals, and they're like, oh, be nice to his parfait. Yeah. Okay. All right. Look, so we had some weird things going on, I know, in our local Sun Discord as far as contracts. And I think it makes sense because we're the only team really doing a lot of things. But I think with the way the league is structured, with the aperture of the Colossara, the six months in the fall, 6 months in the spring sort of dealy, where you're going to see some players on six-month contracts with options. You're going to see year-long contracts with options, multi-year with options, which are a lot more common. But I feel like the six-month thing is something that is sort of happening at a rate that people aren't sort of expecting.
I guess people are making way bigger deal out of 6 months contracts for sure than they should be. It's not that big a deal, especially in the first year of a league. I'm sure John's seen it a lot in a lot of the lower leagues. I'm sure people get passed around like crazy. It's just kind of how it works. It's how people get more experience. They get more playing time, more minutes. Am I right, John?
Frankly, like having guaranteed contracts that cover that long was not a thing for a long while in lower league soccer. Like, this is spectacular. And especially with so many of the CBA protections you get as a player, like the 6 month thing maybe looks shocking on the face of it, but really is pretty much par for the course in terms of what you're seeing at this level, not only in soccer, but most other semi-pro minor league sports. So if you're like a normal working person who sees 6 month contract, I get why it might be surprising on the face of it, but yeah, nothing to worry about, standard practice. And the players now have recourse if there is some sort of nefarious labor thing going on. So yeah, should be good.
Should be. And that's the Super League in a nutshell, as far as I'm concerned. Should be good. I think it's all been good.
Should be good.
I think it's going to be good going forward. John, thank you for joining us.
Yes, thank you so much. Honestly, yeah. We appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to come and chat with little old us.
This has been huge for us.
I love what you guys are doing. I watch as much as I can. Like, seriously, some of the best, if not the best, team coverage out there, if we're being real. So yeah, happy to be a guest. And happy to see a lizard.
I hope you got your chance to say what you wanted to about our team and about the league as a whole. And anytime you want to come back, Liz, Jack, and I would be happy to have you.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you again to John Morrissey and everyone at USL Tactics. We really appreciate getting that outside perspective. and making it sound like we're not just talking into a vacuum about how just amazing our team is.
Yes, our team is amazing. And so it's nice to see that people elsewhere think that it's not that our team is amazing. It's that we have a clear, cognizant plan of what we want to do. Denise Shelton Brown is a good coach. We're doing something important here in Tampa, and it's not just having a women's pro sports team, even though we, Tampa Bay Sun, are the first ever women's pro sports team. But you know, we're doing it the right way, and it's progressing. If there's any concerns about our place in the table at this part in the season, I would not worry. I think we're going to succeed. I think we're going to do well. There's a lot of good plans there. And yes, thank you, John Morrissey, for coming on the show and helping us realize it's not just us being like, God, I love the Tampa Bay Sun. The Tampa Bay Sun are lovable, and it's not just because we're from Tampa Bay. Liz, one other
big lovable. Were we on the same page? I think we were. Yeah. Speaking of lovable, I heard we have a mascot coming. Very exciting.
Look, this is a hint. I don't know any more than anybody else, but the mascot.
We do know the mascot will be Scaly.
It's got scales. It's going to be yellow. Her name is Soleil. Okay? And look, I'm connecting dots here. And this is everything we just said, the three things we just said are 100% confirmed. Scaly, yellow, girl, Soleil. That's four. She's probably going to be an Anole, which is a type of lizard specifically to Florida. This is a bearded dragon. It's not, it's different. He's tired and he wishes I would put him down. He doesn't enjoy being part of the show.
He's very annoyed right now.
Yeah, he's pissed off right now. But yeah.
Okay, that's because he sees the spatula lady.
Yeah, right. Don't show me to her. But yes, Soleil the Anole, as I'm calling her, that's not confirmed. Soleil the Tampa Bay Sun mascot will be unveiled this Saturday at 4 o'clock at the Gasparilla Children's Parade. Which, good. That's where mascots belong. Yes. So yeah, that.
Very excited. Yeah. I love that we're doing a lizard. I don't know if they actually took it to heart, but I did mention when they were talking about mascots, we do have this really cool art installation. I want to say it's like 22nd Avenue North, and you can definitely see it from 275 and 22nd Avenue North. It's a big giant gecko with its tongue sticking out, and there's a fly on the end. It's called, if you Google it, it's actually called Car Parts Lizard, because that's what it's made of. And it was made by a local artist. He did pass away, I think, in the last 5 or so years or something like that. But I thought, I love it. That is as much Tampa Bay to me as the Trop. It's that iconic to me, because I have always seen it driving by.
Yeah. If you've driven to the Trop from anywhere north of it, which is just about anywhere, you have seen this to your left hand, gulfs or bay side when you're driving. It's pretty iconic. I mean, you don't come to Tampa Bay, come to Florida without seeing lizards. I think it's really good. I mean, there's not a lot of good options for masks. I mean, there's a ton of, and there's not a lot of. You know, you can do like a goofy, what's the team in Scotland that had the big stupid looking sun thing? We could have done that, but it looked horrible. If you ever seen Semi-Pro, the movie that the Tropics were based off of, they had a big stupid looking sun. It looked horrible. It was very dumb. Very funny. It was a comedy movie. So yeah, of course, very funny. But no, like, I think like manatee, lizard, those are kind of things. And if you went to the community meetings that the team had for like the brand identity and the logo and all that, that was sort of something that people touched on, was local wildlife, alligators, manatees, lizards. It was like, we all knew, everybody who went there was like, yeah, we know Tampa Bay is like beaches and sun and fun, that kind of thing. So sun being the team name is kind of a given. the way they adapted it to kind of be like the Spanish tile with the logo was really cool. Love what they did there. But like, I think we're taking the whole team brand and identity a different level above just like being very simple. Like, talk about our rivals, Fort Lauderdale United. The name sucks. The name's bad. It's Fort Lauderdale United. Every soccer team is called United. The colors are blue and blue. Oh, because of the ocean, because the water's blue.
Like, well, they're blue and teal.
Because that's what color the water is.
I like teal. I have to stick up for the color. I'm sorry.
I like teal. Look, I'm wearing, look, I got teal shorts on. Yeah. I love it. Well, it's kind of bright blue. But, you know, look behind me. Look.
Yeah. No, that's right. Blue represents blue.
The blue represents the blue. But yeah, so it's a little weak, is what I'm saying. Whereas what Tempe's done, everything the team has done, top to bottom, ownership to fans, to players on the field, to coaches, everything it does a very good job of representing our city, our area. Now, I don't even want to just say our city, because I grew up in Tampa. I'm from Tampa. I consider myself a Tampa boy. East Hillsborough, Tampa. I grew up there, but I live in Pinellas now. And Liz, you're from Pinellas, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so like a lot of our fans are Pinellas, but a lot of fans are also Hillsborough people who don't necessarily go to Rowdy's games, who are, you know, pure Tampa Bayside guys who like. So that's part of the tricky thing about being a city split in half. It's very unique in Tampa Bay, where you do get kind of two different identities that are very much united by the sports teams. You know, right? I think like Tampa and St. Pete are such unique cities in such good ways, and not to say like one's better than the other, because you know I've been on both sides of it. I'm as much connected to Plant City as I am to Lakeland, as I am to St. Pete, to Clearwater, to Tampa. I love all the cities here in Tampa Bay. But they're all brought together by I live in Clearwater right now, but they're all brought together by the sports teams, and Tampa Bay Sun is uniting that. And the fact of the matter is, no matter where you are, Clearwater, Pinellas Park, St. Petersburg, Tampa, Valrico, Riverview, Brandon, Plant City, Temple Terrace, Wesley Chapel, you're gonna go outside, you're gonna see lizards. You know,
it's true. I just wanted an excuse to exclude Scientologists.
Hey, well, no, okay. By including Scientology in Clearwater, you're denigrating the accomplishments and the rights of natural-born Clearwater citizens. Okay, because Scientology is a Southern California social experiment that has gone awry and has found traction. Look. This is a whole thing. We'll get into it later, okay? But Scientology isn't the culture of Clearwater, okay? Just because they have a lot of money. That saying, Captain, I use the C word. We'll get into it, okay? But Scientology has nothing to do with Clearwater outside of the external things, okay? Lizards, okay. Palm trees.
Yes.
The sun. That's Clearwater, okay? But I like the idea. We're not going to know 100% sure who Soleil is until the children's parade this Saturday, right?
Mm-hmm. I do like that she's being welcomed by all the other mascots. They're all the video they put out where they're all training in the Sun Center. Penny, you know, doing tactics. This is really cute.
Penny's smart. She's the smartest mascot. I feel like a PD is like a himbo, where he's just like a hot, fun guy, you know, and Penny's actually smart. And then Thunderbug was exercising, which I like. Yeah. You know, that's fun.
Yes.
And Raymond, the Rays mascot. If you guys go back and watch this video that the Sun put out, Raymond is like heating up a bowl of Post-it notes. I think. Did you see it, Liz? I'll send it to you. Raymond is heating up a bowl of, it's got to be a tea bag.
I might have stopped because I was laughing so hard at some point.
It's like crackers? Yeah, it's crackers or tea bags or Post-it notes or like square chips. But he looks fat as hell and he's just like heating up something in the microwave. And the funny part is the Sun mascot knew to put his note, his invitation, in the microwave. Because it's like, oh, yeah, this guy loves eating food. It's like, damn, that's kind of messed up. But there we are. I do hope Captain Fear, the Bucks mascot, gets involved. Rocky, the USF mascot. I mean, come on. We're right there. Let's just finish it.
It's a bowl of Splenda.
It probably is. That's what it looks like.
It's a bowl of sugar packets.
It looks like sugar packets, sweet and low, Splenda. Yeah,
it is.
Yeah. If the fellows from the RBLR Ray shows is watching and they know more about what Raymond's diet is, tell us what he's eating. Is that just sugar? Is that sugar substitute? What's going on?
Are Raymond and I actually the same? We just eat sugar.
It's all but guaranteed because the scales and everything that we got a pretty little yellow lizard, just like my boy Jack here. And look, he is so tired. I feel bad using him for like clout right now.
Wow. Just using your children for your own personal gain, exploiting them. He is pretty cute, though.
He is. You like him. You guys are friends now.
Yeah.
All right. So, yeah.
We are. I did give him little pets last time.
We're friends now. Liz and Jack are friends. Soleil and I are friends. Soleil and Liz are friends.
Although I do have to know, and someone did bring this up in the Heatwave Discord, is Soleil just going to have random pieces of tail laying around the stadium? Because I'm not going to lie, that would be really funny.
DJ Kitty is just going to be chasing her constantly.
Oh, Sun Team, please make it happen. That would be really funny.
That needs to be the opener, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and he's DJ Kitty on the Titantron, and then Soleil shows up, and boom, they're off.
When we get a picture, we may need to make a graphic of this at some point, and then throw it on a t-shirt that you can then hopefully buy at shop.rblr.com.
Use code
Heatwave. There we go, for 10% off.
There we go.
See, I got it in.
Liz, did we do it?
I think we did the thing.
I think we did. Hey, that rules.
Sounds good.
We use zero of our budget, so that means we get two next week.
Yep.
Yep. That's how it works.
I don't think Eureka's gonna agree with that. But...
No, he's not gonna like that. But hey, I love it. I think closing notes, closing thoughts. I think it's super exciting. It's super good that Tampa Bay Sun are the team making these movements happen in the mid-season off season.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've signed two players, we've released a player. The only other team that has signed a player has been our release. So we have an identity. We have a team, we have a coach that's all here for one reason, and nobody else is doing it like us. And that's what the Sun needs to be. We need to be the standard bearer, the flag bearer for the league, and I just hope we keep doing it because we have all the expectations on it. We deserve to be where we are.
Yeah, I mean, I can't say it any better than that, honestly.
Go Sun.
Go Sun. All right, we love you.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLR Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.